How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. I'm Jay King from MassLive.com. Normally, I'd be joined by either John Corrales of Reds Army or Sam Packard of WEEI, but for this episode, we have a guest, actually, and that's Ryan Bernardoni of Celtics Hub, one of the greatest Celtics followers on Twitter, a guy who really puts a lot of thought and energy into the Celtics from a really analytical standpoint. He's one of the sharpest minds around the Celtics blogosphere, in the Celtics Twitter sphere, and definitely a guy who brings unique angles and really a lot of long-term thought and rational thought to his coverage of the Celtics. So he's a guy I really enjoy talking to, really enjoy following on Twitter, really enjoy getting his perspective on a lot of different things because he does think everything out and he does have basically every angle covered. He's a very smart guy, very bright guy. So before we get to the interview, which will cover a lot of things from Gerald Green's place on the roster to David Ortiz's retirement. Yeah, we went there a little bit with a Celtics tie to it. We talked about Marcus Smart's future. We talked about Jaylen Brown. A lot of different topics. It was a fun conversation. Before we get to that, just go subscribe to us, follow us, however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Audioboom, Stitcher, wherever else, search for Locked On Celtics, subscribe to us, give us a 5-star rating, all that. I know you guys are getting annoyed by my continued requests for you to do that, but please, please, this is how we survive, this is how we thrive, this is how we bring all the podcasts to you. So please take a second, go do that. We would really love it. And without further ado, here is the interview with Ryan Bernardoni, a.k.a. at DangerCart, DangerCart on Twitter. All right, so we're here with Celtics Hub's Ryan Bernardoni, the man, the myth, the legend, one of the best Twitter follows in Celtics Twitter. Go follow him at DangerCart, DangerCart. You'll get some political talk, but other than that, you'll also get a lot of fun Celtics stuff, analytical Celtics stuff, and occasionally a list of all the Celtics players who have been affiliated with the team since David Ortiz started playing with the Red Sox. I got to ask, man. What convinced you to make that list of players that have been with the Celtics or affiliated with the Celtics since the David Ortiz era?
I have no idea. boredom? I don't know. It's so obviously I'm not just a Celtics fan. I'm a fan of many teams. I'm a huge Red Sox fan. So when Ortiz's career ended in sort of unfortunate fashion for Red Sox fans, but it is what it is.
We can say.
Yeah. I don't know if I would go that far, but you could have hoped for much better than getting swept in the first round. you know, everybody puts out their sort of like homage to David Ortiz in all these different ways on Twitter and things like that. And if you just put out like, you know, thanks, David, that's fine, and it's not like he's gonna see it. It's everybody's just saying this stuff for their own reasons. But obviously, most of the stuff I do is, like you said, some of it's political, but only for one more month, I would hope. But mostly basketball stuff. So I was like, oh, you know, what can you sort of, how can you tie him together? And I was just thinking, you know, it's, he's had an obviously long career with the Red Sox, but it's not that long. It's 14 years. It's not like he was, you know, 20 years or some sort of historical outlier in terms of stuff. So I just wanted to sort of look back and do a little, I don't know, memory lane stuff with the Celtics for his time here. But there were, yeah, 205, 206 players who not all suited up and actually played for the Celtics, but who were either under contract or they had their draft rights or something, including a whole bunch of names who I have never heard of before.
I think Tiny Gallon was my favorite. And then
that's the best.
Darius
Sungaila.
I was a big Darius Sungaila guy at one point in my life, back when he was at Wake Forest. And then the best part of your post on Celtics Hub was when you pointed out that Eddie Olizma
played
for 20 teams in 20 years, none of them in the NBA, and one of them was a team in the Philippines. And it was called the Pure Foods Tender Juicy Hot Dogs. I wish I were a fan of the Pure Foods Tender Juicy Hot Dogs.
See, they don't exist anymore. They're now called the Tender Foods Pure and Juicy Red Hots or something. So, you know, you'd have to be... I don't know. I had to look at, I was like, is this like a real team? What is this? And on their Wikipedia pages, it has the history of their name changes, which are pretty much all foods, mostly tube foods. But it's really wonderful. Yeah, they would certainly be my choice if I were living in the Philippines and watching whatever level of basketball that is. That was my favorite part as well.
Yeah, that's what you get into when you list all the players that have played with the Celtics or been with the Celtics since the David Ortiz era. So last time you were on the show, I started with a Gerald Green question, and you were like, uh-oh. Man, we're gonna start here. Like, he'll just be a bit piece, whatever. So I started with the David Ortiz question this time. Also, not really very relevant to the Celtics and their future, but interesting, I think. Especially when you start talking about the Pure Foods juicy hot dogs and stuff. Something I think more Celtics fans will be interested in, although maybe it won't become relevant, the Gordon Hayward rumor today, which is Zach Lowe, probably the least surprising rumor of all time, Zach Lowe, saying that the Celtics have real interest in Gordon Hayward, who will be a free agent next summer. You said on Twitter it doesn't fit your personal view of the franchise. Why not?
So my sort of understanding my personal view of the franchise is that they really only care about becoming a title team, which sounds, everybody listens there, you know, might be thinking like, of course, that's all any team cares about. But it's really not what a lot of teams care about. There's plenty of teams out there that, you know, they would like to be a title team, but they're not, like, that's not their only concern. And that sort of has played out, I think, over most of the Danny Ainge tenure and some of the decisions that he's made or come close to making. And if that's your goal, then what you don't want to do is to get that fame sort of trapped in the middle, right, that people talk about. That isn't necessarily an inherent thing. Teams are in the middle and they're moving up or down all the time, but you can get trapped at the bottom or in the middle, or if you're good at the top. And in my opinion, if you sign Gordon Hayward to a max contract, which is what it's going to take, and you have Al Horford and you have players like Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley who are going to come up and they're going to want large raises that will carry you far over the cap, that if you sign a Gordon Hayward type who is not good enough to make your team a true title contender, then what you've basically done is locked yourself into that sort of upper mid-level range without having a lot of the flexibility that they've had a lot of value in the last couple of years. So personally, it doesn't sort of fit how I look at Danny Ainge's team building strategy, but the rumor's been around for a long time. One of the things that was maybe a little bit interesting is that I don't think Zach Lowe says that he's heard anything from the team that they're interested, which obviously would be difficult. It's basically like that it seems to read like other teams think that the Celtics will be interested in Gordon Hayward, which is very different than having like some direct sort of real rumor that says, you know, we're going to go hard after this guy, which the teams really can't say. But So it's always hard to get a read on those. But that's just my feeling on it, that I've always thought it's like, if you sign Gordon Hayward, you know, where are you really in the NBA hierarchy? You're probably not going to win a title.
I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here. And, okay, so the 2017 summer is probably, or it might be the last year the Celtics have cap space. And because after that, Isaiah Thomas will be up for a new deal. Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, a lot of guys that are on good deals right now won't be on good deals anymore in 2018. So 2017, you want to get as much talent as you can, right? And Gordon Hayward, obviously, he'll be one of the better players on the market. I think Blake Griffin's a better player. Chris Paul is a better player, though he might not fit because of age and because he plays the same position as Isaiah Thomas. If you can use that cap space to get another asset without losing anything, and he happens to be a 6'8" playmaker who can shoot the ball from the outside and switch positions like the Celtics love to do, and you have to go for that, I think. And obviously, it's not the move that would put them into that next echelon, which is where they really want to be. But if you can add a 26-year-old wing who does so many things offensively, I think you have to do that. Do you agree that maybe they have to be aggressive with that cap space while they still have it? Or do you think they should keep that flexibility?
It's certainly possible. Like, it's not, if they went and signed Gordon Hayward, it's not like I would be like, oh, I'm shocked. I can't believe they did that. And you can certainly make that argument that cap space, if it's going to be eaten up by other things, then you're better off getting a significant asset. And one of the things that I've said about Al Horford, and you might even say the same thing about Gordon Hayward, is that at some point in the future, if the team chooses to go the opposite direction from where they look like they're trending now and go very young, you know, they get the first pick in the draft next year and Jaylen Brown wins Rookie of the Year and all these things, and it's like, oh, this is a very different looking team than what we think it's going to be, then Al Horford would be a very good trade piece, right? You could get a lot back in trade for him. The same thing with Gordon Hayward. If you were to sign Gordon Hayward in 2 years into his contract, your team is looking very different, then you could trade him. And if you just let that cap space basically expire by spending it on, you know, maybe you don't even get to free agency with Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley, you use it to sign early extensions with them or something like that, then that asset of cap space has been lost for nothing. It would be better to have Gordon Hayward than nothing, maybe, in those situations. So it's complicated. It's complicated in the way you plan your team. It's complicated in what happens this year. If you use that cap space on Hayward, then it means you won't have it the following year because you could potentially roll that over one more year if you don't get into extension. So there's a whole lot of things that play into it. It's not that the particular signing of Hayward, I think, would be a bad one. It's just that, again, it doesn't sort of fit into the way I look at how I think the team considers sort of the team building process to go. But it wouldn't surprise me if they want him. There's way too much smoke there for it to sneak up on anybody. It's just one of those things where I look at it, it's probably all moot. Like, he's probably just going to stay where he is. But, it's just one of those things where it doesn't quite fit into what I think. This goes back a long way. It goes back to, you know, Danny Ainge looking to trade Paul Pierce in his prime because it wasn't quite going to be good enough. It goes to, if they hadn't gotten Kevin Garnett, they probably would have blown up the team and gone a totally different way at that point as well. Like, there were different times in this in the Danny Ainge tenure where he's seemed to have looked pretty hard at saying, you know, I don't want to be stuck in the middle. I would rather make a surprisingly big move in the other direction than that. So to make a move that might lock you into that sort of upper echelon, not good enough range, it's just it doesn't quite jive with how I think of the team, but it also wouldn't particularly surprise me if they did it, because like you said, if the cap space just expires and you get nothing for it, what good is that?
You saying that about possibly going the other way and pivoting with the Paul Pierce stuff, I wonder if Danny Ainge would have survived a rebuild if they had traded Pierce. Like, obviously he tried to do it at one point, I think, for Chris Paul was the one, and at that time Chris Paul was really young and the rest of the Celtics obviously were not very good and never really ended up, because none of them ever ended up becoming great players. I think Al Jefferson was the best one. It was Gerald Green, Delonte West, Ryan Gomes. Like, if he had pivoted the other way and traded Pierce for somebody like Chris Paul, they might not have ever gotten good. Or maybe they would have still gotten good and would have used those pieces to trade for somebody else. But it's a weird what if to think about. If Ainge had gone the other way, I wonder if he would have survived.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, Chris Paul was probably the greatest rookie point guard ever, right? He had was extraordinarily good right from the beginning. So it would have given him some amount of leeway in terms of just, you know, I traded for this for this player who is instantly great. So it's not like he would have traded him for somebody who it took 5 years to develop, like a lot of young point guards do and things like that. But I think you're right. I mean, it's unlikely that they would have found their way into a position to win the title. So maybe he just doesn't survive because they, you know, he gets fired, but also maybe he goes and leaves of his own accord for something else. So it's hard to say. But it is one of those sort of what ifs of the Danny Ainge era.
Yeah, we have devolved into some wild what ifs.
That's what you get with me.
Another what if. You suggested on Twitter that if Jaylen Brown looks like he can be a nearly net neutral player, the Celtics might be better off cutting Gerald Green. I want to pick your brain about exactly why you think it might be better to go with James Young or RJ Hunter than Gerald Green. Is that just the youth thing to you?
That and contract control. I don't think they'll actually do it. And this actually goes back to the last time we talked. You know, it's hard to sign a veteran player in a league where veteran players have a lot of, you know, they talk, right? They talk to each other. And where the team will be trying to sign other veteran players in the future, if they continue to be a good team, they will be wanting to sign other veteran players for minimum contracts to fill roles and things like that. And so if you sign one of them and then cut them, it doesn't look great. Now, he has a guaranteed contract. He's going to get paid. He would get to double dip and get paid by another team. Wouldn't be the end of the world for him. But the optics aren't great.
Basically.
Yeah, the optics are not great. Well, but at least Lee, they traded for him. And then, you know, so it's not like they signed him, said, oh, hey, you're going to be a part of this team, and then cut him. But from a pure, you know, take everything out of it, sort of Bill Belichickian, who does this kind of thing on a regular basis, totally different situation, obviously. But you could at least make an argument that if you think Jaylen Brown is going to be good enough to get minutes at the three and not hurt you, which is as good as you can hope for Gerald Green, who's not a particularly good NBA player. He had one really good, like he had one good year, but he's 30. You don't expect a lot out of him. If you think you can get those minutes from Jaylen Brown, then, or if you're really lucky from James Young,
that would be really, really lucky.
Well, but Gerald Green was terrible for his first couple of years too, and then he became an okay player in like his mid and late 20s after falling out of the NBA and coming back, right? Like James Young could follow a similar career track, and you could be cutting Gerald Green on the upside in order to keep Gerald Green on the downside. And you have contract control, right? Gerald Green is a 1 year contract. You don't have bird rights or anything at the end. He's in his 30s. Like, ideally, you would rather that RJ Hunter and James Young show enough where you want to keep them instead of Gerald Green. It's, you know, it's just another option more than something that I think will actually happen.
Yeah, the other side of that is we saw what happened when Avery Bradley went down in the playoffs last year. And I think that convinced the Celtics, okay, we need another shooter just in case, because Avery Bradley should not be that important to a team's offense. And obviously Gerald Green hasn't really been a shooter for the last couple of years, but the Celtics are hoping with their pace, their faster style offense than the Miami Heat played, that maybe he'll get back to what he was in Phoenix a couple of years ago when he was actually one of the better bench players, bench scorers, especially in the league. So there's that. And I think you wouldn't have brought Gerald Green in if you had any sort of hopes for Young or Hunter. Like, if you thought those guys were going to be players, you don't bring in a veteran to challenge their spots. Or if you thought both of them had a chance to be good players, because only one of them right now looks to be on the roster bubble. One of those guys will either get traded or cut or whatever from the looks of it so far. And to me, like, if you sign Gerald Green, that's a sign. Okay, we think at least one of these guys is not going to develop into a player at any point while we are interested in having him under team control. And they have Zizic overseas. They have Busele overseas. They have another top lottery pick coming in next season. So there's going to be more fresh faces. There's going to be – they still have a lot of players under contract returning for next season. And they also have free agent money to spend. So it's not like cap or roster spots are going to be readily available next season. So it might just be, okay, we're not going to have roster space next year. Let's keep the guy who's going to help us more this season, and that's Gerald Green, because he can make shots at least sometimes.
Well, but does he? Does he actually help you more this season, I guess, is part of my question. He's been a negative player for eight of the nine years of his career. And so it's easy to look at RJ Hunter and James Young and say, in their season so far, they have done nothing, but maybe they will, and maybe they will this year. It's at least, you know, feasible, as feasible as that Gerald Green will be playing an important role in the playoffs to fill an injury or something like that. Like, you simply have 1 year of track record for it. And it's not last year, it's three seasons ago. And that's just where I come down. Like, if you were looking at a player who was like, oh yeah, you know, he's been a productive player who's a little bit, you know, he's a little underrated, he's this, that, he hasn't had an opportunity or something like that. He's had plenty of chances. He just has never, other than that one season, been a sort of net positive player. And maybe it's just a role thing. He can play the three and in theory can make some shots. But I don't know that he'll be a better total NBA player than even James Young would be this season, just because neither of them were any good last year. And at least I can make the argument that James Young is young and is going to get better, maybe. So that's really what it comes down to. Now, I agree with all the rest of that stuff you said, though. You know, I don't agree necessarily that they signed him thinking that they have nothing else. I think that it is still good process where if you aren't sure, to sign somebody as an option. So I don't know that they signed him just assuming that he would be, you know, that they were going to lose one of the other guys and that it was a lot, you know, sunk cost, whatever, move on. I agree that the roster crunch will continue to build, and it may very well be that they don't care about team control for players who are going to be, you know, at best eighth men, you know, something like that. They may just be like, it doesn't impact us that much. It's a much bigger impact that we get out of the first round of the playoffs or get to the conference finals, and they think that there's some, you know, small advantage in having Green over one of the young players, and that's just sort of the end of the conversation. But, you know, like I said, I'm not at a point where I look at it and say that RJ Hunter and James Young are fighting for one spot. I look at it and say, if both of them have shown enough in preseason and in training camp, that stuff that we don't see, it's at least feasible that they could both make the team. And that then your obvious target for, you know, a cut would be Gerald Green.
Demetrius Jackson somehow has just like avoided all of that talk.
Yeah, well, he's got multiple guaranteed years. He's going to be on the team.
Yeah, his agent did a nice job getting that deal and securing him in to the Celtics team. I try to think, I've got one more question for you, and I try to think of the hardest Celtics question I could think of. What would Kelly Olynyk look like with short hair?
Oh, jeez.
That's not really my question.
I guess it would be like what he looks like when he has a bun, but
that was not really my question. What do you think Marcus Smart will ultimately evolve into? That's a tough
one. I guess what do I think he can evolve into, or what do I think he will evolve into?
But you can also answer it with the can, like the full spectrum of possibilities for Marcus Smart.
So I'm a little down on the will right now, because to me, the best version of Marcus Smart is as a point guard. He's been a point guard his whole life. There's, you know, this sort of value at being a point guard and having the ball in your hands, especially if you struggle to shoot as much as he does. But it seems that the way that Brad Stevens or the team, whatever it might be, views him as is not as a point guard, or at least their primary concern is not putting him in a position to develop as a point guard. They view him as the sort of solution to lots of problems. And those problems aren't necessarily in his best interest to be the solution to, but you can play him, as we know, at multiple positions on both offense and defense. And so he lets you be flexible with a lot of different lineups. And so because of that, because you're asking him to play small forward and be the weak side shooter at times, and because you're asking him to defend bigs on, you know, one quarter and defend point guards at another, he's never been able to settle into a role that best utilizes his talents. So I worry that that's what he will develop as, is sort of a super utility player who never quite...
basketball.
Yeah. and that, but you, yeah, exactly. Or the Brock Holt, right? You know, Brock Holt, he made an all-star team, but like nobody knows what he is. He plays in all these weird, plays everywhere on the field, and they have, there's a lot of value in that. And so he'll always be the sort of analytics darling, all that sort of thing, but he'll never, maybe never be more than that if he can't ever settle and specialize and develop into a role. I think that the best Marcus Smart, the Marcus Smart who, you know, the 538 Carmelo projection system says has all-star potential, is as the best defensive point guard in the league and a adequate offensive point guard, which makes you a, you know, the 8th or 10th best point guard in the league, which with talent distribution as it is and people all aging at different times means that you make a couple of all-star games. And you make all-star games as a point guard, primarily because, you know, like I said, you're the best defensive point guard in the game. And he develops as a nice pick and roll player who can manage a team and who can get to the hoop and isn't a great finisher, but is a little bit better. And, you know, his shot improves over time like some other point guards have. Like, I think that's the best Marcus Smart, but to get there, he would have to play point guard. And in order to do that, he would probably right now have to be playing on a 32-win team that just turned the keys over to him. So if he does that, I don't know if it would be for the Celtics. And if he stays on the Celtics and the Celtics stay good and don't blow up the team and go a different direction 2 years from now, then I suspect it will be a very different career trajectory that he follows.
Yeah, it's crazy. So we've now discussed three of the last... I'm not sure exactly how many first-round picks the Celtics have made, but Marcus Smart, RJ Hunter, and James Young, three first-round picks from the last 3 years, and two of them are on the roster bubble. One of them, Marcus Smart, hasn't yet really been utilized in a role that helps him. There are a lot of benefits to the way the Celtics have built their team, but it is tough for their young guys to crack into that rotation, and especially crack into that rotation in a way that best utilizes them. When we go back to Brown, like he's competing against Gerald Green for minutes. Gerald Green might be better right now, might not, who knows. But there aren't a lot of minutes at the three, I don't think, because I think Gerald Green will play some. There won't be too many minutes at the four, I don't think, or there might not be because Jonas Jerebko is there, Kelly Olynyk's there, Jay Crowder will play some with bench lineups. So it's like, it's really tough for these young guys. Like, it's not the easiest situation for young guys to develop and kind of make their marks.
Yeah, for sure. I think that a lot of people think of Brad Stevens as, you know, they look at it, came out of the college system. He's very young himself. And they think that he must be good for young players just because he looks sort of like he would be. And like I said, he's at the college. But I joke all the time, like, he's a young Rick Carlisle. Rick Carlisle isn't particularly interested in playing young players. Brad Stevens, for his 3 years with the Celtics, has generally defaulted to playing veterans and giving them first crack at minutes. And if that continues, then, yeah, I mean, it might be hard for Jaylen Brown to get the sort of development minutes for the Celtics that he needs. But we've seen that really for everybody other than Smart, who was on such a sort of weird, bad team his first season that there were just a bunch of minutes available for everybody. But yeah, as the team gets better and as Brad Stevens sort of develops his own personality as a coach, you wonder if this will continue to be a thing. Not only Jaylen Brown, but we're going to have, you know, the team will have more high picks coming in the future. It's hard normally for a high pick, you know, even a high pick, to break into a team that's expecting to win 50 games. But also, that sort of, you know, we've seen even when they were a 40-win team that it was hard for rookies to break into to Stevens' rotation. So that, you know, that is something that I sort of vaguely worry about going forward.
Yeah, it would be such a different situation for Brown if he had been drafted to, like, the Sacramento Kings. And he would kind of have...
First of all,
he might get into some fights with DeMarcus Cousins, because I think everyone gets into some fights with DeMarcus Cousins. But he would also have, like, the freedom to stretch his off the dribble game or learn how to operate in the mid post and do a lot of things that his athleticism says that he might be able to do one day, but his skill set and everything else, like, he's not ready for a role like that right now on a contending team. So I'm interested to see what the Celtics do with him. I'm really interested to see what happens with him. Anyway, man, thank you for coming on the show. Everybody needs to go and follow at Danger Cart right now. He will, as I said, tweet some political stuff, but if you can get past that, and you should be able to, it's not too bad. The stuff he tweets about the Celtics, the stuff he writes about the Celtics, is all very good, very well thought of. I mean, even his article about David Ortiz was like he put together an Excel sheet and researched a team from the Philippines because he was very intrigued by Eddie Olizma, the former whatever position he played for the Pure Foods Tender Juicy Hot Dogs.
Don't even know.
I'm a big fan of Ryan Bernardoni's work. So, yeah, everybody go follow him on Twitter, at Danger Cart. And, yeah, thanks again for coming on, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
One other thing I want to address before we wrap this up. Paul Pierce, for the first time, confirmed that he hopes to retire as a Celtic. He's going to play one more season for the Los Angeles Clippers, but he told Sirius XM Radio that he would like to hang it up as a member of the Boston Celtics. He said, "I owe it to my fans. I owe it to myself." That'll just be a really, really incredible moment. I don't know what they'll do for him. I kind of want them to let him play a preseason game. Give him the Marcus George's Hunt roster spot at the end of the bench. One of those guys that's going to the main Red Claws anyway. Doesn't really matter for the long-term future of the Boston Celtics. Give him that spot. Let him suit up. Even let him play up. Let him get one play. Have the crowd go nuts knowing that Paul Pierce is going to play a game, even if it's preseason, for the Boston Celtics. And maybe that's a crazy idea. Maybe it's demeaning to have him play a preseason game. Maybe that's just a miserable idea. But just imagine what the environment would be like that night with everybody who loves, so many people who love Paul Pierce and appreciate what he did for the Celtics, being able to give him one last send-off or one more send-off. You could retire his jersey if you wanted. You could have some other ceremony and save the retirement for later, although we know that's coming. It would just be incredible. For my generation, Paul Pierce is the guy. He is the number one Celtics figure. Obviously, we know about Larry Bird. We're too young for him. We know about Bill Russell. We were way too young for him. Kevin Garnett was the most important figure to the 2008 championship. But Pierce was right behind him. Pierce was the finals MVP that year. Pierce was the best scorer on that team. And more than that, Pierce spent 15 years with the Celtics. He spent every year of his prime in Boston. He grew up with the Celtics. He screwed up with the Celtics. And he evolved into a leader, a star, a 10-time All-Star, a finals MVP, one of the number two leading scorer in franchise history. That's special. So I don't know if they should do a preseason game. I don't know if they should have some other ceremony to retire for Pierce's retirement. But if he does retire with the Celtics like he wants to, and like apparently the Celtics front office has discussed, it's going to be amazing. It is going to be one of the most special ceremonies the Celtics have had in a long, long time. Long live the truth, and long live the Locked On Celtics podcast. Okay, that I shouldn't have done that. I ruined that little moment right there where I was talking about Paul Pierce. But anyway, go to search for Locked On Celtics, subscribe to us, give us a 5-star rating, and come back. Come back every day because we're doing these daily, Monday through Friday. And yeah, that's the episode. You have been listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.